Welcome to the first ever episode of what, Quintessential Fair Play? You like that, Joel?
That sounds like as good a name as any. Well, well, well. Quintessential Survivorship.
Oh, there we go. So, well, I am Johnny Fairplay, and I am joined by the illustrious Quintessential Stud Muffin, Joel, insert something crass, Gertner.
I love it.
I don't know if you remember this, but we did an interview together, probably 8 years ago, maybe. And you opened the show with, and for the record, that this show is not suitable for work ever. you opened the show with, it is I, the quintessential son of and Joel, as I use your girlfriend's asshole for my ashtray. She keeps begging for Johnny Fairplay, Gertner.
So. Wow. Wow. Yeah, man. So. Yeah, I remember that. But I think we go even further back than that, though, because I think the first time I was on your show was back, I think you were doing radio at the time. So it wasn't a podcast, it was a radio show, and I want to say it probably wasn't even in this millennium, I think, or if it was, just barely. But I think sometime around 1999 or 2000, when ECW was still active, I think is the first time that we met up with each other. Long time ago, man, we were tadpoles.
Long time, God, 99. Yeah, I was living in near DC at the time. And one of my favorite interviews. I think the week before I had Dynamite Kid, and yours was better. So there you go.
Well, thanks. That's a high compliment.
Yes, well, Dynamite Kid just doesn't like a lot of things. The entire interview is just like, yeah, I hate that guy. Yeah, I hate that guy. I'm like, all right. I wanted to send him flowers, just cheer him up.
Conversely, I like tons of things. Actually, my fiance will say that it's to the point that I actually get distracted by shiny objects.
Nice. So, all right, well, we are here today to talk SummerSlam. Maybe a little NXT. Were you at both shows? I know you were at SummerSlam last night.
Yeah. I was at NXT and SummerSlam last night, and going to be at Raw tonight because they're all in Brooklyn. And, you know, I love watching my friends, and all these shows are 4 miles from my home. And, like, you'll be hard pressed to find a bigger wrestling market. Yeah.
Nice. All right. Of the two, which one was your favorite live?
They were completely different shows.
Yes.
I like NXT because I've seen, I haven't been to a SummerSlam before. It's been in LA for years, but it's originally a show that was native to this neck of the woods. But I've been to a few WrestleManias, maybe like 75 or 80% of WrestleManias in the last, let's say, 5 years or so. For me, I enjoyed, I think, NXT, which was an unbelievable show anyway, just in and of itself. But I enjoyed it specifically just based on the novelty because, you know, not to say SummerSlam wasn't everything that I thought it would be, but definitely, you know, NXT was everything you could have wanted or thought or expected it to be, and then a whole lot more, you know. Unbelievable match. I tweeted about the Sasha Bailey match specifically. That was one of a handful of live tweets that I did from the building and said, sick women's match? Nope. Sick wrestling match, because it was that good, and it was one for the ages. That was a great match, and there were, you know, tons of others too. It was just the crowd 3.5 hours in, still on their feet, still amazing, and you could say the same for last night as well. But somebody on my Facebook, one of my friends from Australia, had inboxed me, I think. Maybe not, but he had said, what did you think about the show? How was it? And I said, okay, so picture this. You go to an independent wrestling show, high quality independent wrestling, top work rate, you know what to expect. You go, it surpasses all expectations. Oh, and by the way, that same company is doing a pay-per-view the next day in the same building. They're doing their 3-hour episode of flagship TV the following day. in the same building. And, you know, this indie show also happens to have, you know, Monday Night Raw production quality levels. And I said, oh, and by the way, it's in front of 15,000 plus, you know.
Yeah.
So it was a sick show. And I think definitely proof of concept that what they can now do with the every 2 or 3 months takeover, quarterly specials, is that they don't need to be in full sale anymore. If they want to start shopping these around, taking highest bidders, and doing these in a different NBA or NHL arena, a major market, you know, for the 5 times a year, however often that they do it, I think Brooklyn was proof of concept that they could absolutely do that, and I think they'd sell it out every day.
I think as long as they piggyback on a major special, I think it's no problem. I don't see them drawing 13,000 independent of WWE. I think they'd probably be closer to the 5,000, which is nothing to sneeze at. But I think having the captive audience there, that, you know, that flew in for the weekend, that, you know, it just lends itself to the surplus of fans.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, with the expenses, you know, in certain sectors being lower a bit for NXT than they are, you know, for a mainly WWE roster show, I think that's a great silver lining, right? Like, that's a good problem to have if they're down 5,000 plus paid across the board rather than 13 or 15. But, yeah, and then the one other thing... The one other thing from NXT is that not only, you know, did they get the 15,000 plus, even though there were two other shows and people might have already bought a SummerSlam ticket and spent a couple $100 on that, but on that night they were also head up with Ring of Honor running the ballpark also in Brooklyn, the New York Mets, Brooklyn Cyclones, AAA ballpark. And Jim Ross usually plays in a kind of smaller room, intimate atmosphere, like a theater setting, like a one-man show. But Ring of Honor, I think, might have done even better than they did last year, now that they're on TV here in the New York market. I've seen reports that they did anywhere from 2,000 to 2,250 paid. And a lot of people, since that show was announced first, might have already bought their ROH ticket prior to NXT TakeOver being announced, and they still did 15,500. So...
yeah.
You know, kudos.
So now I heard it was half full, and I think that's great. So, you know, if I were a Ring of Honor, I would have changed the time to the afternoon. So,
I think a lot of these Ring of Honor shows that are up against WWE shows, and I could be wrong, but because I know in September it's happening again in Texas when it's like the San Antonio Austin swing. And I think ROH is booking the date first, and that WWE is coming into town piggybacking off of it.
Yeah. So how different were the crowds for Saturday night and Sunday night? I mean, was the crowd noticeably, like, hipper and less family, or was it your standard WWE crowd?
I was getting a call. Can you repeat? You're comparing the crowds, I think, from... Saturday and Sunday.
From Saturday to Sunday, would you say the NXT crowd was younger and hipper and less families, or just, you know, just your standard WWE crowd were just there for both nights?
To an extent, that's fair, definitely, yeah. A little bit of a different crowd, but, you know, Brooklyn's always going to be different than any other market anyway, you know what I mean? Even when it is family, even when it is SummerSlam and not TakeOver, you know, this is that market that is, you know, not far removed from, you know, back in the day where people hated, you know, babyface blue chipper Rocky Maivia, but loved evil Doink the Clown that was ripping the heads off of Barbie dolls and giving them to little girls. You know what I mean? This is that same kind of New York Philly vibe, you know? So this is that town that, yeah, will give Cena, you know, a rough day at the office, just like 75% of WWE markets do. But at the same time, they love New Day more than every other market under the sun, appreciating it for everything that's great about it. So, you know, Brooklyn's that unique market where it's so wrestling smart because this is the fourth generation of McMahon's that they're watching it from. So, you know, we get it. And, yeah, it was two different crowds. It was interesting, though. You know, like, at NXT, I remember standing outside waiting to get let into the building before the show. There was, I saw somebody with an ROH hat. And I was like, well, how awesome is that? You know what I mean? Representing that ROH is where a lot of the NXT talent has come from, you know? There's an ROH show within a handful of miles from the Barclays Center. They only come to Brooklyn once a year. And this person, you know, is putting over ROH by wearing the hat. But he went to the competition, the NXT TakeOver show, you know? So there were a lot of interesting things about the crowd on Friday as it would compare to a usual Barclays show. And I'd say that's pretty much spot on, that maybe it was a little bit more of an indie crowd, maybe a little bit younger, hipper, maybe because of the average age of the ticket holder being lower. Maybe there were less kids, but there were certainly kids there. And the roof flew off the building, for example, when Bailey won. But everybody loves Bailey. You know what I mean? You don't have to be a kid to love Bailey. You just have to be a hugger. So.
Yeah, no, I think Sasha Banks is one of the greatest performers in all of wrestling right now. And it's almost impossible to root against Bailey. I mean, it's just like that's how good they both are. It's just like, you know, Bruce Mitchell, he was texting me during the match, and he's like, is it wrong that I want Bailey to get killed? And I'm like, no. I'm like, I love Sasha Banks. I mean, you know, and then, you know, at three quarters of the way into the match, he was like, I've changed my mind. I'm rooting for Bailey. I mean,
I see parallels to Tommy Dreamer in ECW. Not completely, but like, I just, you know what I mean? Like, just kind of different, you know, but still, you know, you can't, like you said, not root for her. You know what I mean? You just can't. But yeah, just, it was an amazing show. And what an unbelievable vibe, too. And they started the show off pretty uniquely, and there was a speech to the crowd before we went live with Triple H talking about the idea that he had for the open of the live show on TV at 9 o'clock, and basically guiding the crowd through how he, you know, had envisioned it to be. Brooklyn is the kind of market where it's a tough sell. Like, when you try to, like, if you try to hang an applause sign in Brooklyn, may God have mercy on your soul. You know what I mean? Like, Barclays is not a sound stage, you know, but the fan loyalty right now, the brand loyalty is just through the roof. With the exception of a handful of hecklers that probably got their beer on before they got to the building, they went off without a hitch, and the whole thing felt really good.
Would you say Triple H did his best Paul Heyman impression to start the NXT show? Was that the vibe?
Triple H, if we're comparing Bailey to Tommy Dreamer, then I think there's an even more direct comparison. I wouldn't say it was a Paul Heyman impersonation, but it was the same kind of thing. It was the same kind of thing. And yeah, he's great. He's awesome in that role. He absolutely has his finger on the pulse in many respects of what the fans want to see, and was great at just, trying to get, you know, a New York City crowd to react to you the way you want them to is like, you know, herding a bunch of cats that, you know, I mean, you know, you can keep going forward with that, but I mean, you know, the more you push, the more they're going to pull. And Triple H just, you know, put it out on the line and leveled with the fans and just, you know, hoped. And he wanted them to be quiet, and he wanted darkness in the room, and he asked the fans to be church quiet, and 97% of them obliged. And that's, that's a better than even money bet that in Brooklyn that usually wouldn't happen. But it was a great speech, a great moment. And yeah, the whole show was through the roof.
Was the super fan Rick Rubens booed for leaving halfway through the Bailey Sasha Banks match?
I didn't know about that. No, I had no idea. I wasn't sitting near him. I saw him on the screen, but I didn't know when he might have left. So no, I didn't hear that, and I didn't know about that.
Yeah, halfway through the what I have, you know, for in the running for match of the year. I mean, I don't think it gets match of the year, but it's definitely in the conversation. So, but yeah, so the super fan Rick Rubin's left halfway through that match. It's like, what? What do you know? All right. Well, let's run through SummerSlam. All right. We start with the opening match of Randy Orton and Sheamus, which I probably would have gone the tag match in the first match and then had Randy Orton in his customary second match of the night and giving everyone time to hit the bathroom or refresh their beverages. But Randy Orton, Sheamus, what'd you think?
I thought it was good. I thought it was really strong. The fans were into it. The fans just, they know what they are going to, how they're going to react, before. They know the product, there are certain promotions at any given time, if they're shooting any given episode of any given program of their TV portfolio, there are certain promotions where you'll go to the show and like maybe part of the audience isn't watching that show regularly, weekly, and they kind of need to see 5 minutes of the match and kind of feel the rest of the crowd to know how to react. That's never going to be a problem in Brooklyn at that building. Everybody knows how they're going to react to Randy Orton, how they're going to react to Sheamus. That's the fun in the opener. For the NXT show, when they sent out Enzo and Big Cass, that was the way to go because that's what the fans wanted to open the show. And same thing here, it was a strong opener, great match. I think some of the fans were surprised at the result. Just a lot of fun.
Getting back to the opener Saturday night, how over were Enzo and Big Cass? Honestly, when I first saw them, I was not overly impressed, and they've grown on me. I mean, I refer to them as the 2015 version of Too Cool, and that's a compliment. And I think there is room for them on the Raw roster, and I hope to see them on Raw tonight. I think if you're going to introduce them, the crowd at Raw is the crowd you want to. Like Bruce Mitchell thinks that their opening is too wordy and no one can remember all that. And I'm just like, I'm pretty sure it's the same amount of words as the New Age Outlaws. I mean, like there's what, it wasn't, I got two words for you, suck it. It was ladies and gentlemen, well, all that. And I think that the crowd is smart enough to play along and memorize the lines. So I don't know. What do you think?
I think for Enzo and Big Cass, the crowd loves it. They did the entire introduction verbatim. The only challenge was them waiting long enough. They knew the timing of it. They knew which beats to take, and they were so excited to do it that, the biggest challenge was them holding off and actually doing it in Enzo's time rather than beating him to the punch. I mean, it was really legitimately, just with that same, from my experience, I'm going to make a lot of ECW comparisons, not to toot our horn, but just because that's where I was for the lion's share of my career so far. And it really was a kind of everything you'd hope from an ECW arena crowd with respect to that they knew it dead to rights. They just knew it word for word, frame by frame. And it was just unbelievable to hear, this is the developmental brand. This is the future. These are not the people that are on Raw in front of 4 million viewers every week. And these are people who have never been to this market before, live. And 15,500 plus people, just they were with it every second, And that's, again, when it comes to like proof of concept, showing footage to, whether it's networks or arenas, licensing, whoever you're doing business with, it's the kind of thing that looks and sounds super, super impressive.
So would you expect to see them tonight or is it too soon?
Wouldn't that be great? I actually, since they're doing the 1 hour pre-show now on the network, I was actually wondering if there were going to be one or two dark matches yesterday before 7 o'clock, although with a four-hour pay-per-view only happening once or twice a year, you know, maybe you don't want to risk burning out the crowd. I don't think this is a crowd that would ever burn out unless you gave them, you know, I think you'd have to go to something closer to 5 or 6 hours like they did when they had WrestleMania, I think maybe last year, was like 1 hour dark plus 1 hour pre-show plus a 4 hour pay-per-view. But, you know, I still don't think you'd burn this crowd out with that. You know, you could throw Wrestle Marinkiad out there or anything like that, like a Japanese wrestling all-day festival or, you know, Pro Wrestling Appreciation Day or whatever. You could do something like that with a New York City crowd, and they'd love it. But, yeah, I mean, just it was amazing, man. It was really – it's really a historical weekend for WWE in a sense, in a lot of ways.
Well, I think that's the first time any wrestling promotion has run a major venue three nights in a row and sold out.
I was trying to think about that actually too, Johnny, the other day, like a week or two ago, I was sitting around and I was wondering, you know, have they, going back to, you know, let's say the late 90s or going back to 2000, you know, around the time of the Monday Night Wars, early Monday Night Wars when they were winning, 2000 when they were buying Super Bowl ads, had they ever done a Sunday pay-per-view, a Monday Raw, and a Tuesday SmackDown all in the same building? They may have, I'm not sure, but if it's not the first time ever, it's maybe the second time ever or so, and it's the first time in a long time, and this is the kind of market to do that in, and they're coming back. The stocking stuffer tickets are going to be in full effect, as they usually are in the days right after Christmas, because they're doing what they do, I would say, you know, going back to when I started watching wrestling, this is something that they try to do nine times out of 10, is that they will run a kind of a Christmas spectacular show, kind of their version of the Radio City Christmas spectacular, so you can stuff stockings with tickets, give them as gifts. They do right after Christmas that week at Madison Square Garden. And they're doing that again this year. What they're doing actually, though, they're doing Saturday, December 26th with WWE Live at the Garden, and then Monday, December 28th, the last Raw of the year, is back at Barclays. I think in between they're doing Jersey. So,
okay.
Yeah, just amazing. I mean, it's almost like it's back to New York being the primary market, which is sick because, you know, it was that way back in the day. And I grew up here, and this is where I started watching wrestling, and I watched, you know, every promotion under the sun that I could get my hands on. But, you know, Saturday morning TV syndicated, and what I first found was WWF. And back in the day, they were running the Garden once a month, like every fourth week. It was selling out. They also had it for free on MSG Network. So as long as you had, at the time, basic cable, you could sit around at home, not have to buy a ticket, not have to pay, you know, the at-the-time equivalent of $10.25 for a can of beer like people were paying yesterday, not have to pay for parking, and you could just watch it for free, and they were still selling it out even
still
though
selling out.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, so now that they've gone global, and it's 25 years later, even a generation later, it seems like they're still going back to New York City being a core market, which is amazing, you know? So yeah, it was a really, really unbelievable vibe. I think I took a Periscope or two, maybe one from Saturday and one from Sunday. And it's just, if you've never seen wrestling in, there are a few different markets, and you know, not just New York, but if you've never seen wrestling in Philly, if you've never seen wrestling in, you know, Full Sail's unbelievable. You know what I mean? And so is, you know, TNA, their soundstage too. If you've never seen soundstage wrestling in Florida, which is today's version of kind of like studio wrestling back in the territory days, like Memphis and stuff. If you've never seen that, you should do that because Hardcore Justice was just a blast in 2010 in front of that crowd. It's just all about the wrestling intelligence of the crowd.
Wonderful. All right, let's. All right, so we had the quote unquote even Steven booking Randy Orton went over last month, so Sheamus gets to go over this month. I think it's our 112th time seeing the two face one another, but crowd's still into it. How was the crowd? I mean, like, was Randy treated like a star? Like, you know, it's Randy Orton, or is it, you know, the show starting? He's the biggest, you know, biggest name there. You know, biggest, you know, early on name. Like, we're all in. We don't care that we've seen this match 128 times.
No, it was that Randy was treated like a star, and it was absolutely, you know. Again, the Northeast as a market is used to starting off the show tremendously hot and not starting it off necessarily with, you know, an opening match with guys who are kind of young in their career. You know what I mean? They know what to expect. If they get something big that they were expecting to get halfway or three quarters of the way through the show, if they get it to start out, they understand the meaning behind it and the purpose. So, yeah, it was great. And Randy Orton was indeed treated like a star. And he has a lot of appeal with a real big cross-section of the audience.
The girls want to date him, and the guys want to, you know, drink a beer with him.
Yeah, that's true. While you were thinking of that, I was thinking, I happen to be sitting near, I think it might have been a dad, maybe a single dad, or maybe his wife doesn't like wrestling, but it was a gentleman. And two of his young kids, both boys, they all like Randy Orton. They were all cheering for him. They like Sheamus, too. They put him over. Strong moves, impressive stuff. They loved him. They respected him. But as far as rooting in the opening match and what they wanted to see happen, all three of them loved Randy Orton. And every time, you know, we'd see Randy Orton, you know, get a crazy look on his face and hit one of his spots, you know, the kids were like, he hears voices in his head. I see him, he's hearing voices in his head. So it's really like the same way, and maybe it's because he's tapped into and he's been able to even reinvent himself within this kind of viperish, snakeish, don't trust me, tweenerish, Jake Roberts-ish vibe. Maybe it's because of that, but you almost can't help not root for him. You know what I mean? Especially as a New York City fan who's rooted for Jake the Snake Roberts and rooted for the Texas Rattlesnake Steve Austin in his travails against Vince McMahon. So the fact that he's not cookie cutter in any respect, and the fact that he's not, you know, this is a term that's, you know, beaten to death with the white meat baby, really makes him super likable because he's just Randy Orton and he'll do what he wants.
I think the first wrestling figure every kid buys is the Randy Orton, just to do RKOs as well. I think that helps.
right. RKOs out of nowhere on all the rest of the toys.
Yeah, out of nowhere, of course. I think there's sisters Barbies getting RKO'd out of nowhere. I think. So going back a little bit, John Stewart and Mick Foley to open the show was. My fiance's watching and she was just like, what the hell is Jon Stewart doing in on WWE? Like, you know, like she kind of felt it was beneath him. And then, you know, later on, you know, to do the run in the Seth Rollins match, she was just like, what is he doing? Why is Jon Stewart doing wrestling? so how was the reaction to Stewart? Was there a level of respect, or was it, oh, here's another celebrity that I wish was replaced with one of my favorite wrestlers instead?
No, I think he got a good pop because well deserved. He's a lifelong wrestling fan. He's from the area. He's a New Jersey, New York guy, and grew up on Channel 9, WWOR, on it as in like on it, right? Like as talent, and also kind of as, you know, what he would watch on TV. I would imagine a lot growing up. And I've seen interviews where he talks about all different superstars from the 70s, like Chief J. Strongbow and guys from that era. So he's been following it for at least 40 years. So, you know, a lifelong fan. I think the crowd respects that. I think, you know, if you listen carefully to some of his backstage segments, I think, you know, when he calls Undertaker, Taker, and when he refers not just to being a member.
And we were talking about John Stewart's verbiage in the back when we first discussed.
Yeah, no, I was just saying, for me, it was interesting to hear him. He referred to The Undertaker as Taker, so he's obviously been watching for a while, and obviously, you know, is on a close kind of level with the WWE Universe, and then which he did not refer to as himself being a member of the WWE Universe. He instead told Paul Heyman outside Brock Lesnar's locker room that he is a wrestling fan, that he's a fan of pro wrestling. So just
are you,
you know,
trying
little,
are you trying to tell me that that Kathy Lee and Hoda wouldn't do the same thing?
Hey, Kathy Lee's got a lot of WWF history, right? Wasn't she chased up the stairs by Rick Rude or something?
She's quite the history
for sure, because he, you know, a legend that I was blessed to work with, and not to, you know, take anything away from Kathy Lee. I think that shows up in her biography, actually, that she wrote a few years later about, I think she was pregnant at the time, and I'm not sure if that had been announced or not, but Rick Rude being in gimmick, being a, you know, skirt-chasing ladies man, tried to chase after her to put her over, and she wound up, you know, I guess the only spot she could do to avoid him was kind of run up the steps, and she was pregnant at the time, and I think it was looked upon disapprovingly, according to Kathy Lee, by Frank Gifford. It was an interesting excerpt of the book, from what I remember. But yeah, Kathy Lee, through working with Regis Philbin, has been around quite a lot of WWF content and many of its superstars. But yeah, no.
I don't think she'd use the word taker.
What's that?
I don't think she would use the word taker. I think she would say the Undertaker.
Probably, yeah, so, for sure.
Or as my 7-year-old daughter refers to him, the underwear taker. Oh, me. So how was the pop for Mick Foley? I mean, Mick was just on the PW Torch live cast with Wade Keller last week, and you know, he likes to think of himself as a legend and a big return guy in his own head, not to brag, you know, he just, you know, feels he deserves that. And he thinks that WWE views him more of as a, you know, like a Hacksaw Jim Duggan. And then, you know, that every now and then they surprise him and treat him like, you know, the big star returning. And, you know, and he said it feels good. So I felt like we got one of those big star returning moments last night. I thought the dialogue was a little off, but I loved it for what it was. I love Mick and I thought the exchange was great. I just thought the wordplay was just a hair off. But how was the pop?
The pop was great, and yeah, I mean I thought the crowd enjoyed that segment again, because, you know, like you said, you know, cool to see John Stewart out there and putting over wrestling, and this being the first high-profile gig that he's taken since retirement, changed his look. So the whole thing was cool. And Mick is super over with that crowd. New York's loved him from the get-go because he's from Long Island, so he's been, you know, working out here forever, ever since he got trained in Pittsburgh, you know, when he started taking indie bookings, when he started working TVs for WWF. It's been all around this area. So this is his crowd, as everybody knows. You know, with the stories of him going to the Garden and seeing Jimmy Snuka dive off the top of the cage and everything like that. So huge Mick Foley crowd, as you'd expect. I think, you know, Mick is doing great because he's spreading his wings and he's doing a lot of non-wrestling stuff. You know, a lot of the timing of his delivery is new. I think people who expect the same Mick Foley promo every time they see him, just because he's a legend and he's earned it, and he could rest on his laurels, I think those people are going to be disappointed, because now that he's doing a lot of comedy, and he's doing a lot of one-man shows, and he's getting into acting and everything else that he's doing, a lot of his delivery and a lot of his timing is different from what he was doing even in any of his, as Mankind, as Cactus Jack, as Mick Foley, as Gudlove, just as he kept reinventing himself with all that, he still is. So I think anybody who just, you know, expects, you know, oh, great, you know, 10 minutes of Mick Foley. The thing is, I've been to one of those one-man shows here in Brooklyn. You never know what you're going to get when you get 10 minutes of Mick Foley. And I think people who are cool with that and willing to have him, you know, certain mannerisms, facial expressions, you know, if they're willing to ride with him while he tries out cool new stuff that he's learned and kind of done more in recent years, they're going to be, you know, more amenable to just appreciating the greatness that is Mick Foley. I mean, there's just so much that he can do that we don't know because he hasn't done it yet.
I've seen his stand-up show twice. I saw him in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and then again in Raleigh. And he called me earlier that day, and he was just for the Raleigh show, and he was just like, are you definitely coming? And I was just like, yeah. And he was just like, he's like, which show did I do in Winston-Salem? And I was like, the Brock Lesnar story, you know, that was the recurring theme. He's like, oh, okay. He goes, I was like, if you're doing the same show, you know, I'll just catch you next time. He's like, no, come. So I go and he starts the show. He's just like, hey, I have an apology to make. Johnny Fairplay's already seen the show that I was going to do tonight. And so as a result, I'm not going to do that. And he goes, and I'm just going to tell North Carolina stories. And the crowd booed me. It's just like, thanks. We don't get the good shit because you've already seen it. And he apologized throughout the show. I thought it was great. I loved it. But so at the end of the show, he was just like, well, I'm glad Johnny Fairplay had fun. And as a result, he gave everyone a free autographed 8x10 after the show to make up for not seeing his rehearsed material. So afterwards, he's like, you owe me a lot of money, Fairplay.
That's awesome.
Building my,
he's inspiring,
I left my checkbook,
man,
in the car. I'll be right back.
I'm sorry?
I told him I left my checkbook in the car, that would be right back. So somewhere Mick Foley's looking for me right now, that money.
Yeah. No, I mean, the show that I saw in Brooklyn, I think it was intended to be, either to be the recording for the one that they used on the network or a dry run for that one. And, it's inspirational. It's it makes me want to, you know, do a one-man show that won't be as good. You know what I mean? That's how good that show is. You know what I mean? Because what physically, I'm not bringing anything to the table, right? I'm lucky I can tie my shoes and find the front door in the morning. You don't get a body like this by accident. But I can, you know, I can spin some yarn for an hour or two. And just, you know, the fact that guys, first of all, God bless that the wrestling business is strong enough right now that people will go see a show. People will go to a convention, WrestleMania weekend, or not. People will go to stand-up comedy. People will go to a one-man show. People will go to a seminar. I've been teaching seminars for about a year now. And yeah, his show was so strong that it gets me thinking, hey, that's something that as a talker and something that now that he's retired from in-ring action, that's something that you can extend your career and something that you can do and the fans will enjoy it. You know, for me, it would be a forte, you know what I mean? Because that's kind of what I bring to the table. And that's how good his show was. And I've heard, I haven't been to Jim Ross yet, and it's not for lack of wanting or trying, so I can't wait to see one of his. But and I haven't unfortunately been to one of the Jake Roberts ones yet either. But yeah, you know, he's just mixed a genius, and he knows his wrestling, and he knows his comedy, and he knows his pop culture, and he's a super fan, and he's got his finger on the pulse, and he knows what'll get over, and he knows when to be self-deprecating. And he knows when to put himself over. You know, it's just, he's a master. And again, just continues to reinvent himself.
Yeah, my fiance, she came with me to the Winston-Salem show, and she was just like, she goes, you could not be a wrestling fan and like this. And I was just like, well, you are not a wrestling fan and you liked it, I guess.
That's the point, I think. Yeah, no, she's right. And I think wrestling's at its best when, you know, just like, you know, I guess there's in hospitality, or, you know, there's a phrase, you know, we're all friends that you haven't met yet. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Just because we're not friends doesn't mean we can't be friends. I think it applies to pro wrestling where wrestling is so varied, so multifaceted. The TV product, Monday Night Raw, is essentially an athletic, more so than a soap opera, it's also an athletic variety show when you have guests like Grumpy Cat, a Muppet, and that. And I think a lot of people out there are wrestling fans or have the capacity to have wrestling fan tendencies. They just don't know it yet because they haven't watched. And I think that's the onus of the business, is to show as many people as possible by getting out into the mainstream. You could be a wrestling fan too. Give it a chance. It's not so bad. And we had that in Brooklyn. I mean, this was WWE SummerSlam week in Brooklyn, as officially announced by borough president. And yeah, man, they were all over the place, whether it was ESPN, Channel 11 Morning News, you know, just like they do in every town. But obviously, you know, really serious for the long weekend here.
Sweet, sweet. All right, getting to the New Day. How is it possible to cut a promo stating that that Brooklyn knows nothing about hip hop and that and real hip hop is in the South, which is possibly the worst hip hop ever?
A town down.
And still get cheered.
Yeah, no, they were, man. They were getting AZ banner. That's actually one of a handful of, it was a tweet, I think, or an Instagram. And I took a picture and I was trying to get in the frame as much as I could. On the left side was the Jay-Z 8 sold out shows in a row banner. And on the right side was them in the ring, you know, and I just, you know, the caption was, you know, New Day hip hops. Right, and throws shade at Brooklyn and NYC and BK all day, every day, right under the, and then I, you know, at mentioned Jay-Z and put over that it was right under his banner. And, yeah, man, that was a crazy moment, but that was them doing exactly, what they should have done and knowing the reaction they were going to get and getting it. So hats off there. And, just amazing that, you know, like I was saying before, the same way the Garden loved heel doink, super uber heel doink, it is the same way they loved New Day last night. You know, they totally get it.
So, were you happy with that match? Like, you know, enough of all the tag teams, and you know, it served its purpose and good. Or you know, where are you at?
It was a great match. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I mean, so much talent in the ring at one time, and I thought it was structured well. Yeah, absolutely. I thought the fans loved it. I think the fans loved nearly everything, with the exception of points in time where, you know what, like wrestling psychology is so intricately layered and leveled. It's like an onion, you know, that even, you know, I love like walking out of a show and listening to what people are saying, but I never take a stance of, oh, that fan's wrong. Because, first of all, you're in the hipster capital of the world, Brooklyn, so you never know when people are suspending so much disbelief that what they're saying is just pure irony anyway. You know what I mean? But the same way people have talked about canceling WWE Network, and then because they've done that, the only way to see SummerSlam is to pay $200 for a ticket, now that they're not paying $9.99 a month. The same way that people, you know, oh my God, look at the way they're treating Daniel Bryan. The world is ending. I'm never going to watch again. You know what I mean? The same way a lot of that has gone on, and it's only led to business getting stronger and interest being peaked long term, is the same way there was some of that last night. And hey, man, you know, Henny Penny makes a lot of dollars, I think, in this business. I think it creates a lot of water cooler talk. And so I never. You know, if I listen to somebody and they're like, oh, man, who booked that shit? You know what I mean? You know, when you hear that, you can think to yourself, well, who'd you ever beat? Or you can say to yourself, well, thank God people are this interested in pro wrestling that they're probably saying, you know, oh, my gosh, I can't believe it. Oh, that's it. I've had it. Bah, 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 bah. You know, you've had it until 8 p.m. tonight, you know? Because nobody.
I like it. Everyone that stopped watching wrestling because of Daniel Bryan you know, are the same people going, you know, did you see Sami Zayn show up? I'm like, well, how did you stop watching?
right. No, yeah, I mean, listen, people eat it up, and you know, fans get rabid, man. I mean, you know, I have a friend, and I rib him for this, but I don't do it to make it seem like I'm any better than him. But like, you know, we'll discuss wrestling, and he'll be like, this Daniel Bryan stuff is nuts. So what I'm gonna do is I will watch Raw. But like every time they're doing one of these segments that craps on Daniel Bryan and they're not giving him his just due, I'm going to boycott by leaving the room. I love stuff like that. You know what I mean? You know, but it's just fun. You know what I mean? And in that same vein, I think, you know, people last night for 9 minutes out of every 10 or better were loving it. It was just awesome. Last night, yeah. NXT TakeOver, it's been a great weekend so far. Today is Vince McMahon's 70th birthday. And they're live again with Raw tonight. I can only imagine they're going to finish the weekend off strong, especially with people throwing money into the stock market today and tomorrow. And I think, you know, I don't think they're going to rest on their laurels for this weekend. I think there's a lot of this weekend in Brooklyn that hasn't happened yet because there's still 3 hours of Raw tonight. But, you know, having said that, you know, people loved it. And then some people took their cue to voice either what they think their opinion should be or what their authentic opinion actually might be. But nobody's, you know, everybody's going to be back. 80% of those people, whether they were there just last night or both nights so far, are going to be there again tonight in person. Tickets are bought. Even if tickets weren't bought, they'd be trying to buy one secondary market.
Yes.
If not, they'll be sitting at home watching and, you know, nothing is lost. Again, I mean, just a tremendous, we were talking about it before, you know, we were trying to figure out, have they ever done three straight nights in the same building? When you do that, that's history. You know what I mean?
That's Kevin Hart numbers.
Dude, I mean, you know, running a stadium once a year when you've got the power of the WrestleMania brand behind it, where now the cities are lobbying and bidding to get it as opposed to the shoe being on the other foot. And with WrestleMania being one of the top 10 sports brands in the world, that's one thing to get 70,000 plus paid once a year when global wrestling fans from outside the U.S. are planning their once annual vacation to be in that town. That's one thing. But to do 40,000 plus paid in a 72-hour time frame, when you've got Ring of Honor at the ballpark, when you've got Afro Punk in Brooklyn, same weekend finishing up. I mean, it's, you know, New York's a tough town. There's always something going on. It's one of the last weekends of the summer. People want to get to the beach. It's just, there's, you know, a lot of entertainment competition. And to sell that many tickets in the same place to the same people in a condensed period of time is a legitimate accomplishment.
Yep. So, speaking of accomplishments, or maybe lack thereof, Lana's outfit.
Yeah, that was another one of my tweets. Yeah, unbelievable, right? I think my tweet was, ravishing Russian, wardrobe revised. Check her out in her sexy, super short SummerSlam revive.
Oh,
she looked great, man. She was destroying that denim. It was awesome.
I was having flashbacks to Jesse Spainauer and from Bayside High. I'm pretty sure she wore that same outfit with the same airbrushing, I believe.
yeah, they're giving us a lot of fun, man. I'm curious. I'm curious to see where it goes. That's one I'm curious to see how just where it's going to go and how it's going to progress. Because it's cool, man.
I think we're building to a mixed tag at Night of Champions, and I'm fine with that. I want Lana back with Rusev. You know, that's where I am. So.
Gosh, that would be a lot of heat, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Or would she be with Rusev as a babyface or as a heel?
Heel.
As a heel, yeah. What a funny.
Yeah,
like
she's
that.
Just so. I mean, she just owned that character as a heel. I mean, it was legit heat. You know, so.
She's so great. Yeah.
So, all right. that match, the finish of that match, it was a double count out. I wouldn't be surprised if Ziggler was supposed to roll in at 9.5. So I think there looked to be a little bit of confusion. You know, my fiance and other friends are just like, well, no, I mean, you know, if the ref knew he was supposed to get in time, he would have waited. I'm just like, no, the ref's told to do what he's supposed to do. If he doesn't get in at 10, you know, it doesn't super change things. You know, a win by count out or a double count out doesn't really matter. But I think he was supposed to get in at 9.75, and he didn't.
That's interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah,
who knows, right? But, you know, again, this is another one of those thank goodness that, you know, sometimes creative is on a certain level where I think there's stuff intentionally being devised where it's like we're going to create a left, similar to the Undertaker Brock Lesnar finish. We're going to create a scenario for water cooler talk. We're going to give people something to talk about for the 20-some-odd hours in between this show and tomorrow's TV. And we're going to let X many people think that it's this, and 100 minus X many people think that it's the other. And we're just going to give people something to talk about, you know what I mean? So and some of the stuff is just executed so brilliantly, just, you know, just within a fingernail's width, kind of a hair's breadth, where, like, you don't know, you know? Like, you're sitting there watching, but you can't believe your own lying eyes because you just don't know whether something didn't go according to plan or whether it went exactly according to plan. And when you can get people who know their wrestling feeling that way, that is the magic of the business.
So next match we have the Green Arrow and the Red Arrow against Stardust and the King of the Cosmos. how was the Green Arrow? Was he accepted by the crowd or was he passable? Where are you on that?
No, it was good. The fans gave him a chance and he succeeded with flying colors. He looked like a legitimate athlete. He looked like somebody who, you know, you wouldn't think he does it every day, but you wouldn't know any better because he was in there for, you know, limited bursts, working well and gelling with his partner, and the stuff that he did was cool, man. I'm not sure.
I thought he was better than Baron Corbin.
To bust out an end of Fury. I mean, I thought it was cool.
Yeah. So no, I thought he was better than Baron Corbin.
it was cool, and people, I think they gave him a chance, and when you're a celebrity, I think the best case scenario is that people give you the chance, because again, tough crowd here, and then if they give you the chance, now it's your turn. And
yeah. I've been in that scenario, Joel. Sometimes I got the chance, other times I didn't. But either way, I left with plenty of heat. Let me assure you. Oh, me. All right. Next, do we have the Divas next? I think the crowd was ready to cool down once we got to the Divas. Is that where you were, or?
Yeah, that was it. You know, that's a tough spot to be in.
Well, actually, before that, we had Ryback, Miz, and Big Show, and that was kept quick purposely, and it was, you know, it's what it needed to be. So, but I guess. Fast forwarding to the Divas, I like the NXT girls and all that, but it just felt like, you know, Tamina,
now the Divas,
Tamina.
The Divas were on before Cena and Owens, or the Divas were on after Cena and Owens?
Let me double check. So I was scrolling down.
Cena and Rollins.
Oh, well, hold on. I skipped plenty. We had Roman Reigns, Ambrose, Bray Wyatt. And then Cena Rollins. So yes, so
yeah,
the
yeah.
Divas were after Cena Rollins to cool down the crowd.
Yep. We skipped a little bit, but in regards to the Divas, yeah, that's a tough spot to be in because as you'd imagine, you know, Cena Rollins got an unbelievable response, and they had, you know, the really cool interaction with John Stewart and the, you know, what's he in there for? Will he? Won't he? He had one opportunity to hit Rollins, didn't take it. So at that point, you know, I understood that he was going to hit Cena, but he kind of didn't do that right away either. So it was built up pretty cool to get a lot
I didn't like – I was talking with Jason Powell earlier. I kind of like it. Like, I think he should have, you know, looked like he was going to hit Rollins and then just hit Cena. I don't think he needs – like, I compared it to Bobby Heenan, you know, which side is he on? It's like, oh, no.
Right.
So that's where I saw. I mean, you know, I love the payoff. I didn't think he needed to look at Cena first. I think, you know, it should just be a little just look to Seth and then hit Cena. So.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, that came off really well. And that was a great match. And the girls' match was good. But, you know, that's a tough spot to be in when you're out there to cool off the crowd. Because, you know, if the fans who understand, you know, how a show sometimes gets structured, you know, they're still going to, you know, act like they're cooling off. And, you know, when you're talent, it's just precarious is the wrong word. But, I mean, it's just kind of... No, win situation is the wrong word. It's professional. You know what I mean? You're out there doing, you know, on that particular show, what it is that you need to do. And I thought they held their end of the bargain really well with that because I don't think they lost the crowd. I didn't see a whole ton of people, you know, getting up to take a break. Everybody stayed into the show. You know, if you serve your purpose to that end poorly, then it's not just going to be that the crowd gets cooled down. It's going to be more along the lines of that the crowd gets so flattened because it's so far into a wrestling weekend, hours-wise, that they don't come back once the match is over either. And that certainly wasn't the case, as you could tell by, you know, the main event, the rest of the night, and the response and everything. So I thought they definitely – I think, you know, the Diva Revolution is still going strong because the fans wanted this. They asked the promotion to give Divas a chance. And they didn't just give them a chance. They gave them a revolution. And in return, the talent, you know, as we're talking about, gave the crowd and the viewing audience at home a match of the year candidate. So I think it's a really good back and forth where people are getting what they've wished for. And I think the response from the crowd accordingly is really strong.
Okay. Well, wrapping up, because I know we're both on a tight schedule here. Two last things. Is it time to give up on the Roman Reigns, the new face of the company, face? Is it time to give up, or would you hold course?
No, it's not time to give up. The same way, you know, the stock market could drop 1,500 points since Thursday or Friday, and it's not time to sell because the only time you lose is when you sell. You know what I mean? So, no, of course, it's not time to give up. Who knows what they would – I don't know what exact role they are looking for him to fill. I think he could potentially be the next Rock. If they're looking instead for him to be the next John Cena, that's possible too. And then he'll wind up getting the same, you know, mixed reaction in the Heartland. And, you know, 90% overwhelmingly, you know, booed reaction in certain parts of the country, you know. So it depends on how they're looking for him to evolve, how he's looking to evolve his character. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, he's got a lot of kind of unique charm and charisma. I have never thought that he wouldn't be able to be a top guy, but I was really sold when I saw the PSA going back to last year that they've since made into the storyline with him and his daughter.
Yeah,
I mean, that's, you know, he's a star and he has it. And I think whether, again, they want to make him, you know, along the lines of a Rock type or along the lines of a John Cena type or along the lines of a Shield member type like he is, or just instead of the next John Cena, maybe they want him to be the first Roman Reigns. That's always the better alternative to go with. So, no, it's absolutely not time to give up on Roman Reigns.
All right. And lastly, Brock Taker. I thought that Brock Lesnar sitting up laughing and then Taker sitting up the slow, you know, the go-to standard sit up or taker sit up, and then him laughing was possibly my favorite moment in wrestling in the last 2 years.
Yeah. You and the internet too, man. You and the IWC. Yeah.
You don't look to Taker for comedy. and he gave me my favorite laugh out loud moment. I mean, it's like, does this guy know how great that was?
Yeah, that was a kind of dark comedy. That was a kind of horror movie comedy. Hey, man, you know, like, I probably said water cooler twice already, but back in the day, if you could get people talking on Tuesday about Raw or Nitro, mission accomplished. Now, if you can get something to go viral, an image, like the two of them sitting up and laughing maniacally at each other, if you can get that to go viral on social media, you know, the next day, you know, like the next morning, or maybe later that night when people get home, that's one thing. But when something turns into a meme where people are filtering it and they're captioning it and they're photoshopping it, and it turns into a meme before people leave the building, get on the train, and take 30 minutes to get home, that is truly, in today's technological age, mission accomplished. And they did that, man, because that image became a classic stock image within minutes after it happened. So,
yeah, it was incredible. It was incredible. So, and real quick before you go, there's fan footage out of when Taker walks was walking towards gorilla position, leaving. He dropped to his knees and kind of crawled, and then kind of got back up and walked through. Did you catch that? And you know, do you think we're looking at another possible situation like last time? You know, was there, you know, maybe a concussion or did you even see that?
Yeah, maybe. I didn't see it. You're the second person that I've found out from. I didn't know about that aspect of it all until earlier this morning when I saw something on Facebook. I do know it's eerily similar to a WrestleMania moment. And I do know another one of my Facebook friends, maybe even the same gentleman from Australia that I referenced before, his name's Damian Porter. I do know that he pointed out that the calendar day of the year that Undertaker debuted in 1990 at Survivor Series, apparently this year's Survivor Series is the exact 25th anniversary of his debut. They're going to find a lot of stuff to create mystique in regards to continuing this storyline. This is a storyline that doesn't just go back to the streak being broken, but this is a storyline that goes back to Undertaker seeking out Brock Lesnar, sitting in the stands at a UFC pay-per-view and heckling him, saying, you know, why don't you try it with me? Why don't you come back into my world? So this has been going on for years.
Paul Heyman actually addressed that on the Sam Roberts show on Friday, live from Carolines. Did you hear that?
I didn't. I haven't yet.
Sam asked him, he was just like, you know, what really happened? Was that a work? You know, and Paul Heyman doing Paul Heyman. He goes, Sam, I got to be honest with you. He goes, it was a shoot. Undertaker was not invited. Brock did not want him there. Brock Lesnar never spent his money and bought a ticket to watch an Undertaker pay-per-view. He thought it was disrespectful. If you go back and watch that night, Brock lost. His equilibrium was off, and he was battling diverticulitis or whatever. And he goes, and you want to know why all that happened? Because the Undertaker's a dead man and put a hoax on him.
Good stuff. That is Paul Heyman. That sounds a little bit like Paul Heyman.
So I loved it. I'm like, well, mystery solved. He put a hoax on. I had no clue. And then they're still pissed off each other about it today.
Yeah. Listen, man, we're just two guys talking about wrestling. What do we know? You know what I mean? But at the same time, like, if you've been listening and if you've come this far, I think from me, the moral for today is that, you know, wrestling is not a book that's ever going to close. It's not a book that has a last page. If it did, the last page would say, hey, it's all predetermined, and people would be flummoxed, even though they, you know, spend their hard-earned money to go to the movies, and they're watching a Marvel movie that's, you know, with CGI completely 10 times more, quote-unquote, fake. But the moral of the story is that wrestling is not a book. And the same way that even if I watched General Hospital for the last 40 years, every day of every week, unless historically I know what was going on before I was born with General Hospital, then I don't know what happened on the first show before I was born, before I started watching. And I'm not going to know what happens on the show that follows the date of my death. This thing never ends. This thing's been going on for a century and a half. So I think that's the moral of the story, is that any fans who are upset with anything that they may have seen yesterday, you know, don't be deeply offended by anything. It's not the company taking you for granted. It's not people mailing it in. It's not self-destruction. It's simply that, you know, as a microcosm, you've got the Brock Lesnar Undertaker angle, which has been going on for years. And as a macrocosm, you've got pro wrestling itself. It never ends, and it's all about getting people interested because it's episodic in what's going to happen the next time you tune in. And that's, I think, the moral of the story. And between that and today being Vince McMahon's 70th birthday, maybe, I've got a really good feeling that for people who are going to be watching tonight or for people who are going to be in the building, the weekend is not yet over, and I think it's going to be a huge show tonight.
I love it. I love it. So, well, Joel, thank you so much. Also, thanks to Jason Powell at ProWrestling.net for giving us an avenue to spew our thoughts. And this was great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
All right. Until next time, bye.